And you are listening to FW Live on the FW Radio Network. I am Patrick. With me, as always, Danny Danger. Danny, how are you this Thursday evening?
We're doing all right. You know, it's still the heat of the summer. We're not quite into fall yet. You know, we had a lot of wrestling come the past couple of weeks. Some are kind of in between things. Others are rolling hard and heavy.
Yeah. Definitely lots to cover this week. But boy, I have a question for you, Danny. Let's kick this off this way. I mean, obviously, AEW is in the news, and you know, they just came off their biggest show, Wembley, 80,035 people, I think it was the number. AEW is coming out of their biggest night, their biggest show. And all people can talk about is CM Punk and his backstage shenanigans.
People love gossip and dirt. I mean, you watch reality television, you know this. So, you know, people are interested in the gossip and the dirt more so than the actual program, it seems. You know, everybody wants to hear the latest. Oh, what do you know? What do you know? What do you know? Oh, you know a little bit more than this guy? Well, what are you saying? You know, people love that shit. I mean, you've worked in offices before. That's all that offices do. Just go around and gossip and tell stories about other people. So, you know, wrestling fans are apparently no different.
And why does CM Punk have to be CM Punk?
Why is the grass green? Why is the sky blue? You know, why is Hulk Hogan an asshole? You know, it's just in their nature. It's the way they were made.
You know, I would think He would have learned from the last.
You'd think he would mellow out in his older age, maybe, but apparently not. He's just gotten crankier and more hostile, apparently. I think it's because, you know, certain things go unchecked. So as long as certain things go unchecked, well, you know what, you know, they're going to continue to escalate. And so in WWE, of course, there's much, you know, it's much more of a corporate atmosphere. There's, you know, a lot stricter code of professionalism amongst its employees. You know, and any indiscretions are handled. You know, there's repercussions for your actions. There's reprimands. There's, you know, fines and suspensions and working without pay for X amount of time and these kind of things. You know, TK definitely does not have that kind of attitude. He, you know, part of his anti-corporate, you know, I don't want to be WWE kind of thing. I think he kind of decided he wasn't, you know, he was going to let the boys handle the boys. But apparently that's not working too well. But at this point, like, you know, what do? You got to, you know. You got to come in. Does somebody have to come in and lay the law down? I mean, I'm hearing that I heard rumors that, you know, Punk is suspended, but I don't, you know, I didn't hear any confirmation on that. And if, you know, if you suspend Punk, then, you know, like it sets a precedent, I guess, that you got to start laying down the law for everybody. You know, you can't just pick and choose who's going to receive backlash for the things they do.
Sure. But, I mean, we're looking here at the fact that, you know, CM Punk. I mean, we're looking at all in. Okay, it's what it was. All Out in Chicago. I mean, the whole week was about Chicago.
Yeah.
You know, the whole week.
And apparently, he wasn't able to be there. And I don't think he has a match advertised for All Out, does he?
He doesn't, no. I mean, they said everybody's name except for him.
Yeah.
And in a weekend show. All Out is a huge show for AEW.
Yeah.
I mean, it's one of their staples.
I mean, in Chicago's one of their biggest markets, and you would think that they would want Chicago's favorite son there defending his real world championship. Supposedly, the rumor is that he was supposed to be defending that against Ricky Starks. But obviously nothing's been announced.
But, yeah, I mean, it's so crazy. I mean, even here, right, we should be talking about the matches. We should be talking about the attendance. We should be talking about all these different things. But here we are talking about CM Punk.
To be fair, we talked about the matches last week, and none of them seemed really exciting to us. So I wouldn't imagine that our thoughts are going to change after the fact. I think that's part of the thing with people. Like, they were, you know, it was like, oh, the show's going to be cool, but there was nothing there that was like, I'm throwing my money down for this specific match, you know? It's more, you know, I don't think there was anything, any specific match selling it out. I mean, tickets sold before they even announced talent for the show. You know, like, fans were just like, we want to see the brand. We know their roster. We know there's going to be fun matches. People paid for it beforehand. Similar with WrestleMania. You know, like, WrestleMania tickets go on sale and sell out nearly long before the event even comes. You know, like, you based on the roster, you assume most of these people will be, you know, there in some capacity, but you really have no clue. You're paying for the brand. You're paying for the experience. You're paying for, you know, based on shows previous, you know, what they provided. And that's essentially what, you know, the fans in Wembley did. You know, this is the, you know, AEW is coming here. It's going to be a huge stadium show. All the fans are like, oh, man, they're going to throw out. They're going to do all this cool stuff. Let's go ahead and buy tickets without even knowing what's there. And I think fans were, you know, sitting down to watch it, knowing that, you know, they're going to see a quality show. They're going to see wrestlers they like, you know. But, you know, yet again, there wasn't any specific marquee match that made people jump. It was kind of like, here's your usual fan base who knows what to expect and watches it pretty much regardless. You know, they buy all the events. They, you know, they see all this, they watch all this, so they're going to continue to watch. So that's, you know, the fans paid for that, and they, you know, they got what they. I mean, the fans there were happy. They were loving it. The crowd was wild all night long.
Right, as it should be. Right. I mean, it was a huge event.
Yeah.
In a historic venue.
So I heard.
Wrestling.
Yeah. Yeah. So I heard that it was over 81,000 paid, and they consider that the largest paid attendance in wrestling history. So does that mean some of those early WrestleManias where they boasted, you know, 90,000 in the Silver Dome, were at least, you know, 10,000 of those people not paid to come in?
Yeah.
Or is that number clearly fluffed?
I think there's words that's literal both. One, it was, you know, highly exaggerated, but then again, you know, no one really knows, because let's be honest, nobody looks at those books, right? Nobody has access to see those books. So
I mean, people could probably find them if they wanted to. I mean, I would imagine the venue has them. I don't think WWE is the sole property owner of that information.
Right. But in the 80s, I'm sure it was a lot harder to get that information. It's not like you have the technology you have now. I mean, somebody has that information, probably doesn't have.
That's true. Everything's computerized automatically now. So seconds later, you can view it around the world, where back then it was all, you know, cash and paper tickets and, you know, headcount and all that kind of stuff. That's true. A little more difficult to keep track of that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, but definitely one of the top. I mean, the top, I believe, record, actual attendance, still belongs to Collision in Korea. I think, if I remember correctly, they were somewhere between 150,000 and 160,000 people in attendance.
Okay. But I guess they were not, they were maybe not paid. The show itself was paid and they didn't sell individual tickets, I guess. Right?
Right. Maybe. Yeah, I'm not sure how that worked out. Yeah. I'm looking at here the sheet, the top 10, right? So we're looking at, yeah. Collision in Korea, day two, had 165,000 people in attendance.
That's ridiculous, yeah.
150
ridiculous amounts of number people.
Night one, yeah. I mean, Ric Flair versus Antonio Inoki in North Korea in 1995.
Yeah.
Unheard of. Yeah. Shinya Hashimoto versus Scott Norton was your main event for night one for the IWGP Heavyweight Championship, where they had 150,000 people. Third AEW with All In at 81,035. Okay. WrestleMania 32 in Arlington, AT&T Stadium, 709.
Okay.
That's when Triple H, Roman Reigns faced off in the main event. I believe that they said the attendance was over 100,000 people is what they were touting.
Okay, but roughly 80,000 were paid.
Mm-hmm. Apparently, there was a match in 1933 that featured Jim Londos versus Kola Quariani in Athens, Greece, that had over 80,000 people.
Okay.
SummerSlam 1992 at Wembley Stadium has 78,927 people.
That was British Bulldog versus Bret Hart. Yeah, that's the one. Okay,
right. So the paid attendance was lower at 78,000. However, 80,355 was what was the
attendance recorded.
The reported. WrestleMania 2012 in Miami, at Sun Life Stadium, they mm-hmm. didn't give a they that actual attendance is unknown, but the reported number 78,363.
I was one of those in that time.
Yeah, Cena versus The Rock. WrestleMania 3, Pontiac Silverdome. The big number, right? 93,000
fans. Yeah, is what Hulk
Hogan slammed Andre the
pulled Andre up over his head, 30 feet in the air, and body slammed him, and single-handedly made wrestling a household sport, and ended the Cold War, and
officially 78,000 plus.
Okay.
WrestleMania 2008 in the Florida Citrus Bowl. No actual attendance known, but the reported number 74,635. Where are we? 10th place, WrestleMania 29, 2013. At MetLife Stadium, 74,300 was the actual attendance with 80,676 as the reported number.
And that was the once in a lifetime for the second time, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So yeah, just, I mean, and this, you know, obviously there's a lot more WrestleManias. Everything pretty much down the line is just WrestleMania until...
And the attendance is probably very similar between them, a few hundred here and there difference probably.
Right. Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's in the 70,000. So obviously, there was a show in Australia in 2018, the Super Showdown. That one did 70,000 Inoki's retirement match did 70,000. But other than that, you got WrestleMania basically all over. WrestleMania 38, which I was there for. Obviously, a split attendance, 65,719 night one, 65,653 night two. But what WWE has been doing the last few
combining
years,
those,
and saying it's a total number, even though
yeah,
the total number is sure.
Is counting two people.
Tickets.
It's counting the same person twice. But right. it's the number of tickets. That's true. They're selling that many tickets. I mean, they're not lying. They're just kind of, you know, letting people's imagination think certain things.
Mm-hmm. Which, I mean, still, back-to-back nights, can you sell? I mean, I'm sorry. It feels like, you know, Taylor Swift is in town, you know.
Yeah.
That girl sells out shows like nobody's business.
Yeah.
But yeah. So a few questions, right? For you here.
Okay.
Biggest show in attendance that the AEW has ever put up.
Yeah.
Can they do that? Can they replicate that in the United States?
That
the biggest thing
they've
done is Arthur Ashe in New York. They seem to run, you know, basketball arenas, coliseums.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, you've seen the pictures when they come to Atlanta, they go to Duluth, and they don't sell that out.
Yeah, pretty far from it. Yeah, they sell 60-70%. Yeah.
Right? When we've seen an experience, I mean, WWE comes. I'm not trying to be pro-WWE versus you know, AEW or whatever. I'm just trying to state facts to try to get a real understanding here of what reality is.
Yeah.
Monday Night Raw in Atlanta sells out. I mean, then, there was a time where, you know, sometimes we could get comp tickets. Those were very hard to even get when Raw came to Atlanta. That sells out pretty much a couple of days before the show.
Yeah, well, so
not so much.
Well, yeah, but part of it is, you know, I mean, WWE is a household name. They're, you know, 50 plus year company, you know. They're the established brand of wrestling. You know, when most people who aren't like diehard wrestling fans, when you mention wrestling, the first thing they say is, oh, you mean like WWE? You know, when you're talking wrestling with somebody, oh yeah, I went to a wrestling show last night. Oh, you mean like WWE? You know, like that's the point of reference. Okay. It's the household brand. People who, you know, don't watch wrestling currently have memories or stories of times when they did watch wrestling, possibly as a child, or, oh yeah, my grandpa used to love that stuff. And he used to, you know, he loved, you know, going to the matches and all this kind of stuff, you know, AEW is only a few years in as a company, and the product they provide definitely is more for the niche within the niche. You know, professional wrestling fandom is a very niche market. You know, yes, there's crossover into mainstream and stuff, but paying a lot of money to watch it and these kind of things, it's something a few people do of the general population, obviously. You know, it pales in comparison to most other major sports in the United States: baseball, football, basketball, soccer, hockey. Even, you know, I mean, these sports all have much larger fandoms than professional wrestling. And this is WWE, which is sports entertainment, which is supposed to appeal to a wider demographic of people based on the presentation and the entertainment style. Okay. They try to design it that more people can enjoy it, that people can, you can watch religiously and enjoy it, or you can pick it up every so often and watch for an episode or a half an hour and enjoy yourself. All Elite Wrestling is not trying to do that. You know, they realize that, hey, man, that's WWE's got that business down. Okay. The cross media promotion, you know, we're going to send superstars onto this reality show. We're going to make our own reality shows on the big networks. You know, so-and-so is going on to, you know, like when Chris Jericho went to Dancing with the Stars, and then, you know, they had, you know, Stephen Amell come in while he was still doing a very popular television show, come to professional wrestling and actually wrestle a match and stuff. Of that, you know, yes, AEW does some of that as well, but they're still struggling because they're trying to appease, you know, wrestling fans that are, you know, disenfranchised with the type of product that WWE provides. You know, oh, you know, yeah, I like wrestling, but, you know, WWE does a lot of stuff that kind of irritates me or frustrates me as a fan. So AEW, in theory, is supposed to try and catch those fans falling off from WWE. So that's why they're having a harder time, because they kind of assume that you're already a wrestling fan when you come to watch them, okay? They kind of assume that you're already a diehard wrestling fan, and you know the histories and the backstories of most of these wrestlers even before they got to the national television level, okay? They expect you to kind of know the history between FTR and the Young Bucks and where these teams came from and why they come together and all this kind of stuff, okay? That's not something that if you're just flipping channels and see, you're going to pick up on, you know? But certain things in WWE, you flip channels and you can come to it, and within a couple minutes, you can kind of grasp an understanding of what's going on and the stories. You know, it's a little more basic format. You know, they do a very good job of explaining things quickly, clearly. So they're going to obviously do better in bigger areas, in, you know, going to have bigger attendance. I mean, we have friends and stuff like that who don't really follow wrestling, but like they'll come together for a meetup to watch WrestleMania or the pay-per-views, but they're not watching Raw and SmackDown and following internet rumors and you know, finding all these matches in between and, you know, watching online promos that don't make it to the television and these kind of things, okay? I don't think AEW really has quote-unquote casual fans. You're either, like, in it 100% or you're not at all. You know, I think that's the biggest hurdle they're trying to get over, but at the same time, they're not really trying to get over that hurdle. It's like they're kind of comfortable being the niche, but the problem is it's hard to grow your business that way. You know, if your business is, you know, is trying to get the fans who don't want the competition, but you're not really like expanding outside that group, like it's very hard to grow your business and keep it growing consistently. So I think that's the big difference between them, is that, you know, it's a tenure, it's household branding. You know, generations grew up watching the WWF, WWE, you know, people see wrestling on television in passing. They probably just assume it's WWE, you know, WWE, even if it's an AEW commercial, you know, or they're like, hey, that looks a little different than WWE. I didn't know there was somebody else. You know, I didn't know they had other shows. Like, it's a weird business model, but that's why, you know, I feel they have a harder time in some markets, because there's maybe not that many diehard fans where, yeah, WWE comes to town, people will jump on it every 6 months. And yet again, they may not watch the show regularly, but they know what they're going to be provided if they go to a live event, because they've gone to them in the past, or they've heard people gone to them, you know. And you don't have to, you know, to go be live in attendance for Monday Night Raw, you don't have to have super followed everything to still have a good time. And so I think that's the big hurdle and the big difference between the two companies. You know, it's something that Vince McMahon worked very, very hard on, and it's been accomplished. And that's, you know, why ultimately AEW is always going to be fighting from that second position, because they're happy being second.
Gotcha. I mean, It's just interesting, right? I mean, they announced that they're going back to Wimbledon.
Of course, yeah.
In 2024, because
why wouldn't you? Success. Yeah, you made a ridiculous amount of money. I mean, hopefully they can get lightning in a bottle twice.
I mean, all signs it should be a doable thing. I mean,
yeah, I would, yeah.
I mean,
it's long enough time that those same 81,000 people can come back, save up your money and buy another ticket and come back. You know, you're not doing it every other month. So you give it a lot of time and people can do it.
Right. I mean, you think about it, right? Money to bank sold out in the O2 Arena. You know, that was only a few months ago and people were willing to come back and spend their money not soon after that.
So yeah,
I am sure that they will replicate the number, if not possibly even beat it, right? Who knows where AEW will be a year from now?
I mean, we would hope that they would be bigger, if not, at the very least, roughly the same.
Yeah, and with that, you know, you expect so much more. But yeah, I don't know. I just that question mark always come to me, right? It's like, can they really do that type of number here?
Maybe in a couple of certain cities, maybe. You know, they're big market cities that always sell out, and maybe they can go bigger. Maybe they've kind of maxed out that market. You know, I mean, if they sell a 25 or 30,000 seat venue in Chicago, you know. Maybe that's about the number of fans they can draw in Chicago. I don't know if they could jump to a 60,000 capacity venue and pack it the way they do a 30,000 venue. You know, it would be a huge risk for them.
I mean, it would definitely be interesting to see them trying to do something like that with a football stadium. I mean, obviously, they have access to a football stadium.
Yeah.
But an open roof stadium is always a risk, especially in the United States, with the weather being so flaky. As we saw this past
week. Especially in Florida, where the weather's very, very flaky.
Right. I mean
that's kind of what Florida's now, right? That's what Florida's known for, season. Is flaky weather.
The hurricane season. Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, I definitely do think it's very good that they are being cautious, right?
Yeah.
Also, the question is how many of these stadiums or venues have a loyalty to the WWE, right?
That's true. I mean, some may have a contract, you know, that excludes them from, you know, working with, you know, quote unquote competition, whatever it may be deemed as.
Yeah, I mean, let's not forget how long, before they could come to Georgia because of that WCW relationship.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. Because they had a stronger relationship with Ted Turner because it was also much deeper than just World Championship Wrestling because Ted Turner's empire, you know, into AOL Time Warner was so vast. And they didn't want to do anything that would hurt one aspect of that business that might hurt their negotiations with the other aspects. I don't think Tony Khan wields that kind of, you know, the Khan family wields that same kind of influence. Yes, they have a lot of money, but it's like, you know, it's not in telecommunications. It's not in an enormous business that is just making ridiculous amounts of money across the country.
Mm-hmm.
Or the world, even.
Yeah. All right, so let's kind of start looking at this, and we're not gonna break down these matches. Just kind of
please
like,
don't.
go through some of those results, and I just want to get your thoughts on what you think things are going here. Better than you, baby. Defeated Aussie Open to win the ROH World Tag Team Titles. Roderick Strong has been talking about the real Adam Cole and how the real Adam Cole would show up, who he was by the end of the night. We started with the two with Adam Cole and MJF becoming tag team champions for Ring of Honor.
Those two singles wrestlers are always better than a well-oiled tag team. That's a WWE trope that I'm surprised the fans didn't get pissed at.
Right. Which, you know, obviously these two are facing off against each other in the main event.
Yeah, later that night, yeah. Same fucking day.
Title. You know, I mean, this is...
Are they not going to be beat up and worn down from a tag team match earlier in the night?
Yeah. Now, this is also this is exactly what you mentioned, right? Out of WWE's playbook, right? I mean,
yeah.
Remember, I think it was 1997 or 98 when we had the summer of the of hell or whatever it was called, Undertaker versus Steve Austin.
Yeah.
They're going to be facing off a SummerSlam, and they became and like tag team champions.
Two or three weeks before, they became tag champs on Raw. And then, you know, WWE's – that was like one of the first bigger times that I remember because I was kind of a teenager watching at the time. But it's been done countless times between now and then.
Absolutely. So, yeah, definitely, you know, a turn could be coming down. We don't know. But we'll see. We'll get to that for the other night. Again, on the pre-show, Hook defeated Jack Perry to win the FTW Championship, which kind of like here's where starts, right? Jack Perry leaves his match. He passes by Gorilla, which CM Punk is right there because his match is the opening match of the pay-per-view. And, you know, that's when he has this altercation with CM Punk about some stuff about using glass or whatever. Anyways, CM Punk almost refused to go out there, which, you know, you can only imagine Samoa Joe be like, freaking Phil, I've been dealing with this all my life. Story of my life, you know. But they eventually go out there and have a match for CM Punk's Real World Championship. Last 14 minutes, CM Punk retains his Real Championship. I guess they're considering it a championship. All right, six-man tag, Bullet Club Gold, Jay White, and Juice Robinson team out with Konosuke Takeshita to... defeat the Golden Elite, Adam Page, Kenny Omega, and Kota Ibushi, with Takeshita pinning his former best buddy, Kenny Omega. Yeah, that was 20 minutes. FTR then faces off against the Young Bucks in 20-plus minutes to retain the AEW Championship. Honestly, here, I'll tell you this, I thought that the Young Bucks were going to take the win. You know, the biggest show ever.
Yeah.
The most attended one.
It's their company. You know, they're company, stake owners in the company. Yeah.
Right. I mean, they've lost enough. And, you know, this is the chance to shine in front of 80,000 people. I mean, you're going to get what you're going to get from the Young Bucks. FTR is one of the greatest tag teams out there currently. I think this is the right move. FTR needed to continue to be champs. They are. I mean, they're older, you know, they're not that young, but I mean, they are definitely the future. They're the right ones to carry the company as far as the tag team division.
Well, they're the
much better.
They're the traditional heel role, you know. So many of the tag teams in AEW, Bucks especially, are fast paced, high flyers, you know, tag combinations. I mean, that's supposed to be the things that FTR is against. You know, they're supposed to be more traditional, you know, tag in, tag out, not a whole lot of flashy moves, you know, isolate one partner, wear him down, beat him up, you know, eventually hit a big move to put him away. So it works. So them at the top of the division makes for better, you know, traditional wrestling storytelling against a lot of faster, high-flyer guys. You know, FTR comes out, tries to pick one apart, slow him down, wear him down, not let him tag his partner, keep him grounded so he can't start hitting big offensive moves. you know, that's like, that's, you know, wrestling storytelling 101. I mean, that was kind of the story that the Rock and Roll Express told in every single match. That was the story that the Midnight Rockers told in every single match, you know, big guys who were just kind of aggressive and, you know, underhanded tactics against the smaller, faster, you know, flashier guys that the fans connected with, you know, fighting from underneath. And, you know, they may not be the biggest and the toughest, but, you know, they have heart and they persevere and they, you know, their toughness shines through and they find openings and, you know, use their smarts to use their wrestling skill to prevail. You know, that's classic tag team wrestling storytelling. And that's what FTR ultimately wanted to kind of bring back. That's their whole thing. So to have them be the top of the division against, you know, 20 other teams that are basically Young Buck, you know, clones, it really makes sense. It just 100% makes sense.
Yeah. I was going through Twitter right now, just a second. You know how you mentioned that the word was that it was CM Punk would have been wrestling against Ricky Starks?
Yeah.
Apparently right now they're looking to set up a match between Ricky Starks and Ricky Steamboat.
And Ricky Steamboat. I don't think that Ricky Steamboat was going to actually wrestle. I mean, nope. I could see him picking somebody to wrestle in his place, kind of like Jerry Lynn did, got RVD to wrestle for him. But I don't think, you know, Ricky's body is gonna take bumps. I mean, he hasn't taken bumps in 20 years.
Yeah, well, I mean, he did have his final match after WrestleKate, that Sunday night of WrestleKate, I believe. He teamed up with FTR.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, but that's a six-man tag is definitely much different than a singles match, though. A six-man tag, you can come in, kind of hit your big spots. And, you know, maybe take a little bit of punishment without really hard bumping, you know, but you let FTR do the work. I mean, going in there against a young guy who's going to put his working shoes on and Ricky, you know, it's not going to be quite the same.
Yeah. And it's interesting, right? If the rumor was true, Ricky Steamboat quite the replacement for CM Punk.
Yeah.
So interesting there. All right. Moving on, Best Friends team out with Eddie Kingston, Orange Cassidy, and Penta El Cerro Miedo to face off against the Blackpool Combat Club, Mike Santana and Ortiz. In a stadium stampede match, this one also goes 21 and a half minutes. Of course, this match basically is one of AEW staples, right? The stadium stampede, yeah. They're in the stadium, so they're going to go all balls to the wall, and they did.
Yeah.
Some people may agree with this, some people may not. Jim Cornette definitely hated it.
Of course. I feel like Jim Cornette hates everything, though. He's a pretty hateful person. That's why I usually don't give his opinion any merit, because all you ever hear about him is just saying how much he doesn't like stuff. And vulgarly, mind you, calling people cocksuckers and motherfuckers and all this kind of stuff. It's not exactly what I consider stout journalism.
Right, but I would say this. I would say this is definitely a staple AEW type match.
Yeah, it's one of their it's definitely one of their gimmick matches now that they're known for. They've done it. What is it? The third or fourth Stadium Stampede they've done.
Right. So you know you're gonna do it here. Blackpool Combat Club was the right people to do it. Just go crazy and do your thing.
Yeah.
I didn't hate it. You know, they did their thing and they found a way to make it entertaining. So there you go. Obviously, because, you know, this is AEW doing AEW things, the only match of the pay-per-view main card that goes less than 10 minutes is the women's match. Four-way women's match. Saraya defeated Baker, Sheeta, and Storm to become the women's world champion, obviously her homeland, her entire family was in attendance.
Yeah, which is also a very WWE move that you think WWE only co-produced a movie about her life and her family and wrestling. And here they are, in England, she wins the belt and everybody's crying and her whole family comes in and they all cry and hug and stuff. I'm surprised that's a WWE moment that the AEW fans haven't crapped all over.
Yeah. But again, you get four women here, only eight minutes, less than 9 minutes.
Yeah. The biggest thing for me was Hikaru Shida being able to walk in like that as champion, since she had such an amazing run that carried them through the pandemic, but she, those were all empty arena matches. Those were no fans allowed pretty much until she lost the title to Baker. And even then, she lost the belt and then they kind of shooed her out for Baker's celebration. So to have her kind of get, the moment entering huge attendance, because she carried that women's division. She made that women's division something to pay attention to during the pandemic era. And, so to have her get that moment, even though she lost and even though the match was oddly short, that to me is the big takeaway from the match. Don't give a shit about Saraya. Never really paid attention to Paige. I wasn't really watching WWE in her. The few years that she was there in the company was some of the years I was not watching WWE. So I don't care about her or that moment. She is the one that you should care about, not somebody, not essentially you should be building up the young people of your division, not, giving older people the pat on the back, basically.
Yeah. All right. Let's see. Where were we? Darby Allin and Sting defeated Christian Cage and Swerve Strickland in a coffin match, 16 minutes. I think this was a perfect match for Darby and Sting. I mean, they were going to get the win. Obviously, there was no surprise there. Coffin match. I mean, Coffin's everything. Coffin drop is, I think, his finishing move, whatever.
Yeah.
So it made sense. Of course, Swerve taking the L here for the heels. Yep. Sting's taking himself. Stop doing this stuff with tables and stuff like that. I just don't want to see him get hurt.
End up in a wheelchair.
Yeah, I mean, he's picking the wrong time to go hardcore. So stop this thing. All right. 15 minutes is what it took Will Ospreay to defeat Chris Jericho. Again, this is another match where I was afraid Jericho was going to pull rank and do Jericho things and say, I'm the recent AEW and I want to win in this biggest show here. But no, I mean
to be fair, he also was against a non AEW contracted talent at the time. So technically Ospreay is a New Japan contracted talent. So maybe that's why Jericho was more than willing to put him over.
Yeah, that's very true. Will Ospreay looking as good as he's ever looked. He started this right. He's got wins over Omega, Okada, and now Jericho in a 2-3 month span. Will Ospreay's got to be on top of the world at this point. But it was a great match, and Ospreay definitely the right man to win this. Next up, the Acclaim and Billy Gunn defeated the House of Black to win the Trios Championship. Of course, the House of Black coming in and paying the tribute to Bray Wyatt with their entrance. The Acclaim won. Now the Acclaim has new titles. They have pink championship belts, and I guess Daddy is no longer retired.
Yeah, well, it's the way of wrestling. You never truly retire until you're dead in the ground. And even then, they might try to, make towns. I did see a poster shared on Facebook that was tagging ECW type reunion that featured a picture of the FBI with Tracy Smothers. Tracy Smothers still making towns from beyond the grave.
Yeah. I did forget to mention, as we're talking about Sting, and it kind of Sting came out to and Darby came out to Metallica Seek and Destroy, which is a theme used in WCW for a minute,
he had kind of a version of it that they used for in WCW towards the end, and then his impact music was kind of the Jimmy Hart ripoff of that. For the big show, you go, you pay Metallica's fee, baby.
Yeah, definitely that did not come cheap, but I gotta imagine that. Speaking of not cheap entrances, Soraya came out to Queen's We Will Rock You.
Emmy Sakura was kind of enjoyed that, but was also kind of pissed.
Yeah. Metallica and Queen very nice paydays. Not sure how much they had to pay for that, but Ward is, I think, a few years back, some artists were charging up to around $50,000
for one time.
So I'm like, I wonder, right? I hope, since Tony Khan is so open, and about his numbers and about, so honest about how much, about his attendance records. And come on, tell us how much you've paid up for those songs.
For those songs.
Yeah. You're an open book. There's no secrets, right? Nothing to hide. So let us know how much you pay for those, TK. But yeah, obviously, Big Pop, for those who remember I think he only used it for like a summer, or, I don't even think he used it for a full year back in 1999. But Seek and Destroy, a pretty good, fun Metallica song. But We Will Rock You at Wembley. Yeah, I think I should have known as soon as I heard them using that song that she was gonna win.
That's true. They're not gonna pay all that money to only use it once. You're gonna use it a second time when they win.
Yeah. All right. So where were we? Yeah, the main event: MJF, Adam Cole. It was a very good match. Enjoyed it. Too many Canadian destroyers for my liking, but that's no here nor there. At the end of the day, the referee, gets taken out, but she brought back. MJF defeats Adam Cole. No cheating, no anything. They remain best friends. And I guess they're going to play the long game with this one and see how much longer they can stay friends. They can stay co-champions as their Ring of Honor tag team champions. You know, we saw Roderick Strong and the Kingdom go face to face with Adam Cole this past Wednesday on Dynamite, calling him out. I think there's still a lot left to go with the storyline. So, you know, I don't think that we're gonna do any shenanigans with this main event, only because, you know, you know the rule, right? At the end of the night, Hogan must pose is the big saying. You know, you always want to leave the fans happy and everybody, you know, happy at the end of the night. MJF and Adam Cole hugging at the end of the night after their match, 29-minute match, was going to keep the crowd happy.
That's as indie-rific as it gets, baby. You guys beat the crap out of each other for a half an hour, and then you get up and you hug and you shake hands and you talk about how good each other is and how bro each other are and how, you know, he's the best in the world and all this stuff. That's it. It's all about the respect, broskies, and all about that. And that's, you know, that's the indie-rific-ness that AEW basically is emulating. You know, they just take that and put it on TV. And that's the whole game plan, and that's why I'm saying is that it's it's a little that doesn't appeal to every single audience. You don't want to see, you know, every single hero and villain hug it out at the end. You want to see a clear, definitive winner and a loser, you know? You don't want to see Thanos and Captain America hugging and shaking hands after they fight each other, okay? You want to see Thanos get killed, defeated, and the world saved by Captain America.
Yeah. All right, so that was All In, which leads us to All Out. So I'm just going to go ahead and run through the matches. I'll leave you about a 5-second pause to see if you have any comments about any of these. Then I'll just move on to the next match. In no particular order, Source will be defending the AEW TNT Championship against Darby Allin. Could you see a title change? Is Darby Allin ready to become the new TNT champion again?
Sure. I mean, but also he just had a coffin match. Maybe he should be selling injuries from that and the dangerousness of that match. But, you know, maybe not.
Maybe he let his inner Cena, John Cena, you know, do the trick, you know?
Probably, yeah.
You know, let the Cena power.
That's probably it, yeah.
Miro versus Powerhouse Hubs.
Yeah.
Chris Statlander will be defending the TBS Championship against Ruby Soho.
Yeah.
Why doesn't Soho have a championship already? I'm not sure. But
and now she's just essentially the, you know, the lackey of Saraya and even Toni Storm, you know, she's kind of like the third one out.
Yeah. How did that work out for her, right? I mean,
yeah.
She didn't choose to lead WWE, but.
She used to have her own faction, and now she's in another faction where she's the bottom of the totem pole instead of the top. So, you know. Yeah.
Yeah. Orange Cassidy will be defending the AEW International Championship against Jon Moxley. I mean, all signs lead to Moxley should win this match, but Orange Cassidy will do Orange Cassidy things, and those best friends, I'm sure, are lurking around, waiting for revenge. Kenny Omega, who faces off against Kenshi Takeshita in a singles match. Obviously, Takeshita defeating Omega, pinning Omega at All In. Omega wants to seek revenge at All Out.
Yeah.
Amen tactic match. Bullet Club Gold. The Guns and Jay White and Juice Robinson will face off against FTR and the Young Bucks. Apparently, the Guns are now official members of Bullet Club.
So apparently, at least they're part of the Bang Bang Gang.
Yeah, so FTR and Young Bucks face each other at All In. Now they're teaming up with each other All Out.
Apparently.
There will be a battle royal for on September 1st, which is tomorrow, I guess.
Yeah, Friday night.
It's going to happen at, what is that second? Rampage?
Yeah, there you go. That one.
I keep forgetting about Rampage. Anyways, yeah. Rampage is going to be a battle royal. The winner is going to face off against a challenge Better Than You for the ROH tag team titles.
Okay.
Samoa Joe is going to defend the Ring of Honor World Television Championship against Shane Taylor.
Now, that's the only match that I saw from this card that slightly interests me because I like both guys a lot. And I know they're going to go out there and deliver. Yeah, that's pretty much the only match that I saw that was like, oh, that one could be fun to watch.
And there will be a tag team match. Eddie Kingston teams up with Katsuyori Shibata to face off against Claudio Castagnoli and Wheeler Yuta.
Still so weird to me that, you know, Shibata can't get clearance in New Japan to wrestle, but they have no problem with him going to All Elite and wrestling there. I mean, semi-regularly.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he with the same, you know, is he still the ROH Pure Champion, or did he drop that to somebody?
No, he's still the champ.
Yeah, so there you go.
So I'm actually interested. I mean, I'm sorry, Wheeler Yuta, no matter how much you try, that still feels out of place for me in this match, you know?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, the other three are kind of icon, you know, legends of the industry in their own right. And here's, you know, new guy.
Yeah, you got grown men who are tough and will go to battle, and you got Yuta who's just there.
Yeah, just a skinny nerd with no charisma.
So that's All Out. Obviously, you know, the announced challenge is going to be put up at Collision between Ricky Starks and Ricky Steamboat. So we'll see what comes of that. But All Out should be interesting to see how it goes. Apparently, also Tony Khan has said that he's still trying to get to the bottom of things and to hopefully be able to give an update on the status.
Huge announcement, bro. Punk. A huge announcement. Huge announcement. Tony Khan's huge announcements are the ratings bar for All Elite Wrestling.
Yeah, so will CM Punk be at All Out? Will he be there at All this week? I mean, technically, he's supposed to be suspended, but, you know,
quote-unquote suspensions in wrestling aren't exactly the same as suspensions are in most other sports.
Yeah. There's money to be made with CM Punk, so do you really want to let him go?
No, of course not.
But that's the Sunday All Out from Chicago, Illinois. From Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, this Saturday, we have WWE Payback.
No, see, I completely forgot about that.
I mean, I don't know. They put that day for some, quietly for some reason a while back, and it's just, it still feels like, SummerSlam just happened not long ago.
Yeah, yeah.
With the tribute show for Bray Wyatt, and Terry Funk last Friday, everything right now. It's about two things in WWE. The Bloodline and the Judgment Day. Those two factions have taken over WWE.
Yeah.
Obviously, the Roman Reigns' change of attitude that I've been asking for a long time when he was a babyface, when they finally decided to go with it, was the biggest blessing in disguise. I mean, probably the Bloodline angle being one of the biggest faction angles since, I don't know, NWO and DX.
Maybe.
And I like how organic it was, right? I mean, that's the part that you can appreciate. It's just like, it wasn't something that was forced. It was one man who talked about how good he was and how he was going to wreck everyone. And, he grew into the tribal chief and the table. Now, Judgment, on the other hand, I didn't know what to make of Judgment Day at first with...
Yeah, seemed like an odd mix of people. Yeah,
Edge, picking Rhea Ripley and
Priest and stuff. Yeah,
and it started feeling out of place. Then I started getting used to it. The good heels to have, the baby faces against. You had your number of baby faces that tried to challenge. Judgment Day, obviously, Finn Balor, you can beat him, join him, did exactly that. I will say this, and you can disagree, or tell me you agree or disagree, or give me your point of view, but I don't believe that Judgment Day is what it is today if Edge had not been the one that started it all.
You mean like the first feud with Edge, you mean?
No, I just mean that Edge deserves really the credit for how they are now. How big and how popular and how central figures of the company they were. Because at that point, they were just a faction where, Edge, the veterans, stick a couple of young people, and hopefully that rubs on them. But that time spent with Edge, I think he kind of started developing Judgment Day to become what they are now. And I think
Edge
was the right guy to lead them at the beginning.
Yeah, I could see that. Yeah,
I think had Finn been the leader from the get go, it wouldn't have worked.
Yeah, it might not have. Yeah. Well, they wouldn't have gotten the attention right away because, Edge is a longer tenured main event star. So people are already paying attention like, oh, if they're putting these guys with him, then they must see them as, as big stars on the rise. But if it's just three young guys, quote unquote, it's a little like, oh, okay, been there, done that. Let's see what, are they going to survive? Or are they going to, fall apart?
Right.
And then fall into nothing.
And also, if they had originally put him with Balor, the first thing they were going to do, the comparisons to Bullet Club.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
And Balor Club and all this and all that.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's like you needed to make sure Judgment Day was something different, that when Balor joined and took over, people were not even going to think twice about Bullet Club.
Yeah.
And be like, Judgment Day is Judgment Day. And I think that Edge doing what he did to build a group and put the group together, and just, you know, he gave them, I'm losing this word, but I think, like, he validated that this group was...
Yeah, he gave them legitimacy before they even got off the ground, yeah.
The World League, absolutely. And that's what they needed. They needed that, and I think Edge is the right person to do that. I mean, think about this, right? I mean, when the Brood first started, you knew they were there. But did you really care about them until Edge showed up?
I did, yeah.
No, before Edge showed up, did you?
Yeah, I loved Gangrel. I thought he was weird and different.
I forget you're into that stuff.
I mean, the Edge and Gangrel and Christian all kind of showed up on TV about the same time.
Just about, yeah.
And then they formed together and became the Brood. But apart from that, they were just three kind of weird singles guys. Mm-hmm. Christian was kind of the third one out. I don't think Christian had actually debuted on TV as a character, but like Edge had those whole vignettes about him showing up, and you know, then he had the brief feud with Mark Mara where he was teaming with Sable, you know. So you know, Edge maybe had a little longer tenure, but you know, yeah, I like the Gangrel. It's fucking cool and weird. He's spitting blood, and you know, his Impaler DDT was really cool. You know, you know, he was very different as far as characters go.
Yeah, but to an extent, it got elevated with the addition of Edge.
Well, that's because it became a faction instead of just one guy.
Yeah.
Okay, that's what I'm saying. There, until Edge got together with Gangrel and then Edge's brother Christian joined them, there was no Brood. It was just Gangrel, and then it was just Edge.
I think it was Gangrel and then Christian.
No, I think it was Gangrel and Edge, and then Christian joined because Christian was Edge's brother.
See, the Brood, not the movie.
Even then, I don't think they were calling themselves the Brood if there was just two of them. That's not really a faction.
All right. Okay, yeah, I see where, yeah, they were, Christian was the last one to debut. They were all still individuals.
Mm-hmm.
Edge.
Yeah. Had the big debut vignettes and all this stuff, and then Gangrel basically just appeared on Sunday Night Heat and just kind of wrestled there pretty consistently.
So when Edge started, Rafter Edge started, Rafter Christian started, Edge and Gangrel were feuding.
Yeah.
And Christian sided with Gangrel. So they worked together. They may not necessarily have been the Brood, but they were a duo. And then they got Edge to join them and became the Brood.
Okay.
So that's how it was.
But it wasn't like they were an established duo going out for a long time. It was probably only a matter of weeks before Edge joined them.
Probably.
Right? Yeah, which is a different scenario.
Yeah. Yeah, September, October, yeah, just a few weeks, no more than a month. But yeah, so Judgment Day now, though, I mean, my gosh, right? I mean, obviously the popularity of Rhea Ripley is still there.
Yeah, Rhea and Dom is his, you know, as their weird relationship. And then you have Priest, you know, who kind of started getting a bit of a following. And then, you know, his work with Bad Bunny and all that, you know, really helped elevate him in the fans' eyes.
And in The Office.
And definitely in The Office, once they saw how he delivered in those positions. You know, and then of course that would lead to him, you know, winning his Money in the Bank match, and
Yeah, no, for sure. So yeah, I think tremendous job what they've done building these two groups. Another thought before we get to the matches here for Payback. How about LA Knight? Right? I mean,
yeah, tremendous popularity. People are crazy about this guy. That stupid catchphrase is simple enough and stupid enough that people fucking love it.
Yeah. Unfortunately, when he moved up to the main roster, became what, Max, whatever.
He was Dupree or something? Wasn't he Max Dupree at first?
Yeah, Max Dupree. You know, and whatever, and the models. That was a whole mess. But thankfully, Triple H decided to repackage him back to LA Knight. And there are the haters out there that say that he copycats The Rock, that he copycats Steve Austin. Listen, he may take a little bit from each of those wrestlers, but he uses all the little things to make his own persona.
All the big superstars, past, present, and current, have all borrowed from superstars previous to them. And you find what works for them, or you know what, you find what worked for the people of the past, and find some way to kind of tweak it and make it your own. And become your own unique personality. That's how wrestling has always worked.
You look at Hogan, right? Hogan took pieces from, what'd you call it? From
Superstar Billy Graham. Jesse the Body, and, you know, right. San Martino. Yeah. He took little bits and pieces from all those guys to kind of make the Hulkamania persona.
And nobody hated that.
No.
You know, everybody's cupping their ears, you know, eating their vitamins.
Yeah.
You know, and all that. And
everybody bought into it 100%. Yeah.
Swept the biggest nation in the world. Superstar in pro wrestling history can do it.
I mean, it's fundamental of everything else in the history of civilization. You know, you take what the previous civilization, quote unquote, did right, and try to improve upon it and make it uniquely you. You know, do that in math. You got to add and subtract before you can multiply and divide, and before you can do trigonometry and all this kind of stuff. You know, in science, you gotta know the basis of, you know, mixing two color liquids and all this stuff before you can start separating the atom. You know, like, it's all building blocks.
Yeah, I mean, like I was supposed to say, look outside of wrestling. If you look at Michael Jackson, the King of Pop, the greatest performer in the world, right? I mean, he himself claimed he took things away from so many different.
Oh yeah, from Elvis and James Brown and all these different people. And not just within music, but other, you know, artistry and all this stuff. I mean, that's just the way of the world, you know? So take LA stuff Knight that people here, kind of recognize and make it different and make it you.
Right. LA Knight here taking some things, but he's made it work so well.
He's made it uniquely him, yeah. He's made it his own thing. But yes, there are quote-unquote similarities. You can attest to it, you know? The one-word catchphrase, you know, like Steve Austin's what, and, you know, his smack-talking, you know, trash talking ways, kind of like The Rock and stuff, but you know, so what? Right. So what?
Yeah, I mean, am I supposed to stop listening to Ice Baby? You know,
because it's Sample Queen. I mean, most people, it's 2023. Most people stopped listening to Ice Baby a long time ago.
But you get my point.
Yes. But that was also stolen without permission and blatantly stolen, not just inspired by.
It had a different base. Oh, this is what he said. Anyways, I love the rise of LA Knight. I love how he's kind of so popular.
I mean, it's yet again, you want to talk about organic rises. The people started taking to this guy and they started giving him a little bit more, and more people are taking to him, and they're giving him a little bit more, and more people are taking to him. I mean, that's an organic rise in professional wrestling.
Yeah. You know? And I see the LNA merchandise.
Oh, yeah. Sold. It's selling big. Yeah. People love it.
So
all it has is his fucking name on it, and people love it. It's not even that good looking merchandise. It just has his name, and they want it because it has his name on it.
Well, but that's because the name on the marquee says L.A. Knight. Yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. Happy for him. So here we go. Let's kick off with him. L.A. Knight faces off against The Miz.
I think L.A. Knight needs that win, man. I mean, L.A. Knight's had a lot of, you know, quote-unquote bigger matches, even in his time at NXT. And, like, an astounding number he lost. I'm talking like he had 24 big matches and 23 he lost. So, you know, although Miz isn't at the top of the pack now, he has been there and he's been in the pack for such a long time that, you know, a win over the Miz is seen as establishing in the eyes of the fans. Right. So I think LA Knight needs that win, you know, over Miz to continue his rise. Because if he just has fun talking and then he loses and has fun talking and he loses, the fans eventually are gonna stop having fun talking with him because they're gonna go out there is lose. Why are we cheering him? He's just gonna go out there and they're just gonna make him lose. You know, he needs an establishing win over a big established star. And I guarantee you the Miz has absolutely no problem doing that.
Well, not at all. And that's because Miz is
He's a sports entertainer. He is the premier sports entertainer and quite possibly the greatest sports entertainer.
Yeah.
Of all time, even.
All right. We'll see here. What is next? Becky Lynch versus Trish Stratus in a cage match.
I feel like that match has kind of gone under the radar. Like, I feel like that's the – I don't – yet again – I'm not super watching the product, but with all the other things that have been happening in wrestling the last couple weeks, with all the build to the Wembley show for All Elite and Terry Funk passing and then Bray Wyatt passing, I feel like this should be a lot bigger than it is. But it's just kind of fallen down the chain of the news stories of professional wrestling.
Yeah. It's a shame. But Becky should pick up the win at this point.
This should be the blow-off win that Becky gets and Trish passes the torch, et cetera, whatever.
Yeah. Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn, facing off against Finn Balor and Damian Priest to defend the Undisputed Tag Team titles in a Steel City street fight. Obviously, in the Steel City, so why not have a street fight name after them? Yeah. How about... I think this may be it. I mean, this may be when, you know, once again, Finn loses the match by some mishap from Priest or vice versa, and they just fight. And
you think Judgment Day splits? You were just talking about Judgment Day being so hugely popular and successful. You ready for them to start fighting already?
They might be ready to implode. Yeah.
We already got the Bloodline doing that. You don't want two versions of the same fucking.
Well, you know, one's playing the long game, one's playing the short game. So.
But it's the same fucking game. Yeah. Put these two teams against each other. That's what I'm saying.
maybe for Survivor Series. Rey Mysterio defends the United States title against Austin Theory.
He should be defending against Dominic Mysterio for the control of the Americas. U.S. versus Intercontinental. Control of America. I assume the gloat will continue to reign as champion of the United States.
Yeah, probably. Rhea Ripley versus Raquel Rodriguez for the Lily Women's Championship.
I mean, this should be an easy win for Rhea. They're going to try their hardest to make it seem like Raquel's a real threat, but yet again, you talk about popularity. Rhea Ripley needs to continue dominating.
Yeah, I know for sure. And there's no reason why she has style right now.
Yeah, she's hitting Riptide on somebody as big as Raquel is going to be a big feather in her cap.
Yeah. All right, last but not least, Seth Rollins defends the World Heavyweight Championship against Shinsuke Nakamura.
Now, I will say, some of the video package I saw hyping this match a week and a half ago was outstanding, okay, where Shinsuke is talking about, you know, Seth Rollins is back, and how he knows it's the weak point and all this. And he, you know, Shinsuke Nakamura should have already been world champion in World Wrestling Entertainment. He should have beat AJ Styles at WrestleMania after he won the Royal Rumble. Now's the fucking time. You got to give it to him. Seth Rollins is going to be over without the championship. He's already proved that. He doesn't need a title to be one of the most popular and most talked about people on the show.
Yeah.
Shinsuke Nakamura needs a championship win, a big championship win, to prove, I mean, to the American fans, even though he's been with WWE for so many years, he's still trying to he doesn't feel like a big deal competitor to most of the American fans still, because they've only known his WWE tenure. Even a lot of them never paid that close attention when he was in NXT. So he still is fighting for that respect to be seen as a top competitor in the United States. And I think, you know, a win over Seth Rollins here at the height of his popularity, you know, at a main event level, that's what Shinsuke Nakamura needs to be established and seen as a top level player.
Yeah, but the question is, you know, I mean, will he? I mean, should he? Can he win from? Of course, but you can never know. You never know.
Yeah.
With Seth Rollins as hot as he is, it's like you really want to take the belt off him. I thought it would have been good to take it off him and put it on Finn Balor when they wrestle, but you know.
Yeah.
It needs to make sense, I think, and if they do not let him win against Rollins, I don't know. It could be a setback, but yeah, we want to see Shinsuke get elevated. I think a big win or something different to do that. But I don't know. I'm afraid they're gonna continue to ride the Rollins Express here.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Rollins has proved that he doesn't need the championship to be that popular, though.
All the times he lost before winning the belt, right?
Yeah. And every single match was huge, and the fans were clamoring for it. And he went out there, and he had a great match, and he fucking lost. But the fans didn't care. They still wanted to see him come out and do it all over again next week. If Shinsuke Nakamura loses again in a big match, again, the fans are going to be less willing to believe each time he goes towards that, you know, goal. They're going to see him as less viable each time he loses. So if you want to have him be a top level star, you got to give him that chance at least once.
Yeah, no, for
You're
sure.
You're moving into the quote unquote slow season of WWE when, you know, you're going to be battling for ratings. You know, you're going to lose the ratings against football and stuff. That's the way it's been every single year, and that's the way it's going to continue to be. Their ratings are going to drop during main season football, okay? College, and professional. So this is kind of their quote-unquote down season when they are known to kind of test things.
The waters, yeah. And,
yeah, test the waters on new stars at the top or a new title reign.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who's most likely,
yeah, see if people really believe it. Believe this person is a top-level guy or not, you know?
Yeah.
Give it to Knock, man. The king of fucking strong style.
We'll see this Saturday, 8 o'clock, Peacock. All right, a couple more things before we get out. Of course, as we know, Jerry Lawler has been off TV for a while. He had a stroke in February, which prevented him from being able to participate in the pre-show panels and whatnot.
The mania and all that, yeah.
Yeah, Monday Night Raw this past week, this current week actually that we're in, past week, Raw was from Memphis, Tennessee.
Memphis, Tennessee. Is that how they talk in Memphis, Tennessee, Mr. Lawler?
Mm-hmm. That's right. And, of course, Jerry was backstage, when they were in commercial,
Kevin Owens to the crowd or whatever.
And Sami Zayn, called him out. He came out. You can still tell that he's still recovering.
No doubt. I mean, that's
stroke.
Could be a very, very long recovery process.
Yeah. Smiled a lot, waved at the crowds, and then walked away. But who knows, how his health is. I can only hope that, for speedy recovery. But it was great to see Jerry Lawler, around.
I want to give a specific shout and reference to Impact Wrestling. Okay, next week they will be having their 1,000th episode of Impact.
You guys tell me on my notes.
Yeah, I mean, holy shit. Impact is the little engine that could. They really are. From the Asylum days, nobody thought that they would still be around. From their rise and then the Hogan days, nobody thought they would recover. I mean, there's still a lot of people who don't realize that show is still on the air. Mm-hmm. But holy crap, it is. And holy crap to 1,000 episodes. They're planning a big show with a lot of returns, including the return of Gail Kim to the ring, the return of Awesome Kong to the ring. They'll actually be teaming together with Raisha Saeed in their corner. And they said, they challenge any knockout past or present to team with them or against them. So far, it has been a 5-on-5 matchup. One slot on each team is still unannounced, but so far you have Gail and Kong and Jordan Grace making her return to the company as well. Who's the fourth on their team? Masha Slamovic, I think. And then on the other team, you have Deonna Purrazzo, Giselle Shaw, Angelina Love returning with Velvet Sky in the corner, not wrestling. And I think Savannah Evans is wrestling on that team as well. And then there's one mystery person for each team right now that may announce closer to the show. But, to me, I mean, the Knockouts division were, the Knockouts division, the X division, and the Tag Team division were, to me, the three things in Impact that drew me in, because they were providing at the time things that WWE was not. Right. Okay. WWE had a very weak women's division, and I felt that they could always do more with it. And the Knockouts division gave me that. WWE always felt what I felt lacked a strong tag team division. I mean, I would still say they do. They only have two or three actual regular teams on either brand, yet they have a tag team title for each. But that was something that Impact always gave proper time and main event slots to tag team wrestling. And then you had the X Division, you know? This was the next step of evolution into what was WCW's Cruiserweight Division, which was, to me, was always the highlight of WCW. So to have those three things, those were what drew me into the company and kept me watching and kept me a fan. And even through, you know, lower periods of time when, you know, I may not have been following as closely, I was still keeping an eye on it because of some of the stars and some of the stories that were bigger in the times when I did watch. You know, so.
Yeah. I mean,
that's something they've always put at the forefront, especially the knockouts. Yeah. And that's always,
let's not forget, though, how they started, okay? Because when they first started and they had the idea of charging $10 for people to watch their weekly television.
Yeah, $10 every single week for a two-hour show. Yeah. And my friends and I sat down and we put $250 in each to watch that shit every single week.
Yeah.
Rather than pay a $40 or $50 once a month for a 3-hour show, you paid $10, you got 2 hours every single week, and then $10 for the next 2 hours. And every single show was treated like, you know, they were trying to earn your money every single show. Next week, we got this guy coming in, and we got this big match. And then, you know, so that's how you had X Division's matches main event. And then the next week, the tag team title match would main event. And then the next week, the heavyweight title would main event. Because they were trying to draw you in and give you a reason to pay money every single week. And I mean, that's what I'm saying. That was the base premise. And it was trying to give work to a lot of these guys that, you know, WWE had cast aside or decided they didn't want, you know, after WCW collapsed, you know, especially in the South where, you know, was not territory that WWE was running regularly. I mean, it sounded like a crazy person's dream to invest that much money right out the bat, but they did it, and it's definitely had its ups and a lot of ups and a lot of downs. But
absolutely,
the in-ring product has always stayed consistent. They found their place in history, and here we are 20-plus years later, 1,000 episodes of Impact Weekly Show is a amazing accomplishment.
Yeah. I mean, this company was ready to be shut down a few years ago.
Like a half dozen times. I mean, you know, after Hogan left and after, you know, when they were getting ready to shut down because Panda Energy was going to be done with them. And then, you know, Corgan was going to start investing in them and all this. And then, you know, Corgan eventually went and take the NWA and all this. Like there was a whole lot of stuff going on. Yeah, where for a long time there, we thought that Impact was just going to completely be gone. Right. And it was going to be dissolved and it was going to be no more. And, you know, eventually WWE would just buy the intellectual property, you know, just to have and throw away in their vault and put some stuff on the network and, you know, all that. But they persevered and they've always found a way. Yeah. And I think that the way that they're able to push themselves to investors for people to continue to pay attention to is – look at the quality of what we're doing. Yes, people aren't watching, but it's consistent quality. And you give us a platform and people will watch.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So to celebrate Impact 1000, you mentioned the women will be in action. Of course, Gail Kim, you know, she agreed to do the one more match. Team of Austin Kong, Alex Shelley versus Trey Miguel for the Impact World title. We're going to have the Ultimate X match, Feast of Fire match, always fun staples of...
Those are the things that helped Impact build and those became signatures for them.
Yeah.
You know?
So that will be airing live September 9th.
Next week.
Yeah. Team 3D is going to be facing off, is going to be teaming up for the first time.
Yeah, first time in several years.
Yeah, so, Frank Kazarian, Tracy Brooks, versus Eddie Edwards, Alicia Edwards.
Tracy Brooks. You want to talk about OGs in TNA is Frankie Kazarian and Tracy Brooks. I mean, Tracy was there before Frankie was.
Yeah. So, yeah, this is going to be a big show. Everybody should definitely tune in. That little engine that we thought couldn't.
Hey, man, they just keep on chugging up that hill. It's a very steep hill, and they're not going fast, but they are slow and they are steady.
Yeah. So, kudos to them. September 9th again, so we'll be watching. What a way to, end the show now. On the good note, with Impact 1000, but it's been crazy. Next week, we're going to talk about what happened at All Out. We'll hear
the
more about
out of All Out.
So
you missed that pun, man.
Yeah.
The fallout of All Out.
I always miss the good ones, and I...
And you give us the crummy ones again and again. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We'll figure out what's going to happen with CM Punk. What happens after Payback.
Payback.
Gunther defending his Intercontinental Championship next Monday. So much still out there to talk about. Speculate and everything. We'll be talking about it next week here on FOW Live. Thank you all for listening. As always, make sure you follow us on the X. I can't believe we're calling the X now.
I know, right?
At FOW
Radio. X, give it to you.
Danny is on the X at Danny F and Danger. Eric, Soldier, EJ423X, Mika Villas, at Mika Villas. I'm there, at ELMNPA. Subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, Amazon Music, Spotify, anywhere you listen to the podcast. And until next time, stop fighting and keep watching wrestling.